Viewers, welcome to this episode of the Influencer Talks. Today we have Parmita Sarma as our guest. Parmita is co-founder of Akshar Foundation. She is a humanitarian and social activist and currently doing major projects on the education for the underprivileged children. She completed her master's from the Tata Institute of Social Sciences. When she was barely 19, she was doing some major projects in the education sector for the underprivileged society. Parmita is also the recipient of the prestigious Indian Express Devi Award for her contribution as an educator and social worker. Parmita initiated a very unique project through her non-profit organization, Akshar Foundation, which was called Education for Plastic. This was a very unique concept developed by her. And today, let's talk to her to get more details on this project and her future plans. Welcome to the show, Parmita. And we have Thank read a lot about your yourself. You are doing a great job with Akshar Foundation and with the as a principal of the Akshar Forum. You look after the complete operations of the school and its development. Your model of education has been hailed by many great people and institutions like Niti Aayog and others. So can you just brief us what exactly is your model of your school, and when did you conceive this idea and how it developed?
Great. So, we wanted to provide education to children, and we started in 2013 with that thing in mind. And then when we started our first school, we started recruiting kids from all age groups, from age group 3 to 14. And then we saw that the older kids, they were regularly dropping out to go work in local stone quarries. So we found out that there were a lot of students in the neighborhood that were working as child laborers. So we were trying to come up with a way to keep those students in school.
And so this, that is when we thought actually, that. Just for the audience, where did you start this project actually?
We started the project in Pamohi, in the outskirts of Guwahati.
All right. Yeah, please.
We started the school, and we saw that a lot of older kids, they were dropping school to work as child laborers. So that is when we thought that we had to come up with an idea to keep these child laborers at school. So we saw that, in our school, we also have a different method of placing students in the classes, in the sense that we group the students by their skills, not by their age. So if you have a 13-year-old child coming to the school for the first time, the child would start from level one, and they move through the curriculum as and when they are ready. So it's not like the whole class graduates from one class to the next. So when we had these older students coming to school, we saw that they could learn the basics very quickly. Right. So then we thought that maybe we can put these older students to teach the younger ones, and then they get paid in the process. And the younger student also gets one-on-one attention. So that is very beneficial for them as well. Right. So when we tried doing that, that worked very well. So we had students who were very eager to teach the younger ones because they were getting paid for that. Right. And we also told them that the more you learn, the more you will earn. So suppose you only have the skills to teach a level one student, but if you learn properly and you go higher up and you teach level two students, you will get more money. So that was a big motivation for students to continue learning. So we started like that, and then we saw that we had great responses from the student teachers as well as the younger students, because you could provide individual attention to the younger kids, which middle class families, they can provide that at their home. They have tuition, so they can interest in the child's work. Absolutely. But these poor kids, they had nothing at their home. Their parents couldn't care less about their education. Right. Because of that, we thought that this would be a great way to supplement the lack of care that the students have. And these older kids, in the meantime, they also change in behavior, because they have been treated by the society like they are worth nothing. That has been their whole upbringing. So when you come to a school and a younger child calls you sir or ma'am, and then you're teaching someone and getting paid for your services, that, you know, that puts a lot of self-respect in them, gaining confidence, because they're like, okay, I'm worth something. And when you use money, it's like confirmation that, okay, you're worth something. And because that is how it is with adults also.
Absolutely.
Like, we do a job, we get paid for our services. So that helped the students turn around. And then in no time, in the beginning when we started, we had a very hard time getting students to school because we were a different kind of school. So parents were very skeptical. Plus all these kids were already working outside. So why should they take them out of work and put them in our school?
Right.
But very quickly, within like 1 year, these students that we already had, they were doing great. And people started coming to us for admission. So within like 1 year, we got to a point where we couldn't take in more students. And we had reached our capacity. So then we also saw that teaching is not the only vocation we can teach our older
kids. One question here. When you say that you got the students for teaching and you taught them with the knowledge what they already had or the skills they had, so it was a formal kind of education like mathematics, science, or it was just like skill development?
No, formal kind of education. So these students, they are at school for like 6 hours a day. So from the 6 hours, for like an hour and a half they teach, rest of the time they're receiving formal education.
Right.
So it is like a full-fledged school with formal education, and we also blend in vocational training with that.
Right.
So when we decided,
then when you select a student, senior, to teach, what was the criteria to select them, and what was the process that, you know, if a person could, a child could teach another one, a younger one? So what was the criteria and process?
So usually, so when we first started, we let all the older kids teach who had crossed level one.
Okay.
So if they're in level two, that means they know their ABCs. That means they can sit down with a child and teach them. And currently we let students from above level five teach. So after you reach level five, you can start teaching younger kids. And that depends on the child. So if sometimes the child doesn't want to teach, they can be like, okay, I don't want to teach today. We don't let the child teach. So it's not forced on them. But they want to teach because they earn money and self-respect. And it's fun, you know, sitting one-on-one because we have so many school children who provide tuition to younger kids, right? So it's the same kind of environment. Plus they get paid for it at school. So students are very eager to teach the younger ones.
Right.
When we had these older kids coming to school regularly, we realized that we have to teach them different vocations because teaching can't be the only vocation that we're teaching them, number one. Number two, a lot of kids were not great academically, but they had amazing hands-on skills.
Correct.
So we thought that if we could have like a formal vocational training for these students with different activities, then they can also experiment while they are at school, learn different skills, and at the same time build up their own careers or build up what they might be interested in.
Right.
So that is how we started introducing different vocational training. So the plastic recycling center was one of the parts of the vocational training. We wanted the students to be conscious about the environment. We wanted them to participate in restoring the environment. And we were wondering as to how do we get involved so that they know the damage and they can feel involved.
Absolutely.
So when we first talked with them about this issue, we found out from them that they all burn plastic at home. And that is the only way of disposing plastics. And in the winter months, they apparently huddle around the plastic for warmth. So you have these young babies where their parents take the children and sit in front of burning plastic for warmth. So we thought that this has to stop immediately.
Absolutely.
How do we get them to stop?
Yeah.
So then we thought that, okay, maybe we can tell these kids to bring their clean plastic waste to school. And then the older kids, they work at the recycling center and they make eco bricks from the plastic. That way the older kids are engaged, they are recycling plastic, they get paid for it. And the younger students and everyone else, they have to bring plastic to school. But then we first introduced this policy, we did not have a lot of plastic coming in because it's a lot of effort. You have to have it clean because you have students working with it. So we did not take dirty plastic. So you have to get into this habit of segregating the plastic and sending it to school. So then, and by then the parents were already very happy with our school and our school is free. So we started telling the parents that you have two choices. You either pay fees or you pay fees in plastic.
Okay.
So after that, we have had no issues because parents would rather pay in plastic than, pay money.
Yes.
Of course, their financial condition also doesn't allow them to do that. But we had to find the motivation for them
to bring.
Exactly. So since then, we have had no issues. And then students bring in plastic regularly, once a week usually. And then the older kids recycle it. So we have different kinds of vocation training. We have electrician training. We have landscaping training. So at school level, the students get the option of choosing what they're interested in, try different things, and then figure out their own interest also. At the same time, have the skills. So by the time like a student graduates from our school, they basically have most of the life skills that they need. Like we have students who are learning how to grow organic vegetables. We are building cob houses. So our students know how to build houses with cob. They are learning electrician work. They are doing carpentry work. So, you know, so they have a lot of skills that they required for like a good life. Right. And that they can do themselves, and they have the skills. So we will also help them set up businesses in future.
Absolutely.
So now we have our first batch graduating this year, and then we will start guiding them as to what they are interested in and help them set up small businesses. And our idea is that the school has to be like a community center where we can provide everything to the community. Like we also want to have a healthcare facility in our school where the students, the older kids, they can do basic training, basic, you know, checking the pulse, etc. So that the villagers can come to the school also and get some basic help, and we can guide them further as to for more professional courses. So now we want to build up more, like when we started, we had like no funds. So we could like, you know, our activities were limited to whatever funding we had. But now we are kind of somewhat comfortable in the sense that we are able to try different vocational trainings, and we will also add on like nursing. We have added office work where the students train to be office assistants. So, you know, so they are getting a lot of valuable skills in the process. And we also think that the education system, our current education system, is such that we don't provide any skills to students.
Right.
So after, even we have graduates who have no life skills or who can't do anything because they studied their books, they memorized, appeared in exams, and we don't want that for our students. So why should we add on to that, right? Instead, if you focus on vocational training and teach them, of course, the regular academics. So the kids who are very much into academics, they move along that way. The students who are not that great in academics, they have the option of choosing different skills and find out what they are comfortable in and, you know, choose their life profession accordingly.
Right.
So we are also teaching them economics and math and business studies at the school. We want to set up like a golf course where the students will manage. So they will also learn, we have students who are teaching, who are studying business studies and accountancy.
Right.
So those students who would be running the golf course essentially, and they would learn how to run a business. So we want to get the students a taste of real life experiences at the school where they can develop their skills. We have a school bank, for example. So every week, every Friday, the students get paid. They have the option of either buying something or depositing the money in the school bank. So the students are getting into the habit of depositing money now because
so whatever they earn from the school,
exactly,
by doing any vocational work, that is gets deposited in the school bank.
School bank, and that is up to them. So they can either choose to buy something or they can deposit the money. So now we have students who are buying like, you know, cell phones with their own money because they have saved money over a long period of time, and they're able to afford to buy their old cell phone. So this delayed gratification, they're learning about it by doing. Like the place where we teach the students, they have no concept of saving. But these kids, they're learning the concept of saving by doing it. So that is what we want our students to actually do, you know, to learn things by doing it versus just talking about it.
All right. But how many students you have currently in your school?
We have 110 students at Pamohi.
110 students.
Yes.
Achha, initially, when you started way back in 2013, I'm sure
15 it was... actually, you know, what happened was we tried to start in 2013, but I was still studying then. And we were not at the same place. We tried in different locations and we got kicked away from different locations, politics and lots of other issues. So finally, we could start in 2015, like on our own land and get the program started.
All right, you started in 15. Still, you are so young at 6 years back. You must have been younger. So how did you face the problems, initial problems which came to you? What were they in getting these students and actually encouraging, especially for the students? It was not a problem. Problem is with the parents. Because telling them, because they are the earning hands, they are of the family.
Exactly.
So convincing parents to send their wards to the school, how did you manage it and how was it? Experience?
Well, that was very difficult. If we went to like 50 households, maybe five of them would send their kids. So we did like a door-to-door recruiting in the beginning, and that was not fun. Like it was very, very difficult to convince the parents. Plus, we were an English medium school. So the parents were also of the idea that tomorrow, if you leave, then what happens to our kids? Because we can't afford to send them to a private school.
Correct.
So they had very valid, you know, reasons for not wanting to send their kids to our school. So we somehow managed to recruit 20 kids and then we focused on them for 6 months. Those 20 kids, they did so well that after that, we have had like no issues recruiting Marquez. We also have students with special needs who came to our school because their parents, they had like given up sending their kids to schools in the regular system. So we had those special needs kids coming to school, and they also progressed very well in our school because we grouped the kids by their skills, not by their age. So, you know, so those older kids who have special needs, they hang out with the younger kids and they're happy hanging out with them because they're at the same mental level. You know, and the younger kids also, they have like a big person who's with them. They're thrilled. So it really works out at our school. We also teach compassion to our students because they have to be nice to anyone who has any special needs. So, and then we are very, so here's one thing that I did not tell you is that we fine the students for bad behavior. Nothing works like fining. Same like with the adults.
All right.
If you miss a traffic signal or if you run through a traffic signal, you pay a fine. Same with the kids. If they do anything wrong at school, they pay fine. And that makes them not want to do anything wrong. So we have a system where, you know, kids are very well behaved and they know the correct behavior because if they don't do that, they will be losing money.
So
this has worked like really well for us.
So fine,
this way we have been able to get them.
The fines they pay in cash or it gets deducted from their school bank?
Bank. Actually, we try to. So what happens is the students, they maintain a timesheet every day. So every day, whoever they taught, they write it on the timesheet and then that money they deposit on Friday. So we usually try to deduct it from their timesheet because then they have this timesheet where they're seeing that, okay, I lost 15 rupees because I was mean to this student. I shouldn't do it again. If we deduct it directly from their bank account, it's not like in front of them, right? So they might like lose track of why we are losing. So we kind of try to make sure that they understand and it registers so that they don't do that again. And it has worked like wonders for us.
Now, I also have read that you have an animal center, animal shelter in your school.
Yes.
And how does that add to your values?
So we have a small animal shelter at school where we pick up puppies from the streets.
Right.
And we treat them like they have some wounds, infection, we vaccinate them and then we give them for adoption. So we are also trying to teach the students from a young age to build that compassion in them. And again, when we have like three dogs at our school. So when we got them as puppies, the students, they were not good to them because they have always had bad experiences with dogs. So they were like, okay, you know, we don't like them. And they were mean to them. They started losing money. Their attitude changed immediately. And now they have such a bond with our school dogs that they're good to every dog. In this lockdown time, we have students who are feeding stray dogs every day. And they want to do it now. So I think that our main problem is that, you know, we treat students as they are worth nothing or like they are young idiots, or that's like the general mentality of the society. Okay, these kids, what can they do? They are good for nothing. But that's not true. Kids can be amazing. We have to give them the right guidance. So that is what we are also trying to do, to give them the right guidance by showing them so that they are motivated to do it.
Okay. During the course of these 6-7 years when you have been working on this school, you must have come through so many stories, moving stories about the students, the parents, what you have done. So can you narrate few of them so that which actually, you know, made you do better for them?
Yes, I'll tell a story of one kid who stays at the school hostel now. So he used to, so when we first started with the 20 kids, his sister was studying at our school. And she was always like dressed in rags. And then he would come to pick her up and drop her back every day. And he would be dressed in rags. They had no sandals. So then I asked the kid one day, do you want to study at our school? And he said, yes. From then, that kid started coming to school. But the other kids did not treat him well. Because even when you go into a poor community, there are still levels of class in amongst them. You know, so they were treated like really badly by the entire society. And the other kids would not sit next to him because he was like dirty and, you know, he had rag clothes. So that's when we actually decided to introduce uniforms so that every kid wears the similar clothes and, you know, have shoes and everything.
Yeah.
So that particular kid, and he was very angry. He had a lot of anger issues. So if you're like telling him something, what he would like, he wouldn't respond. And then he would leave the classroom and then sit with his fists curled, like lots of anger issues.
All right.
So Mazin, my partner, he started trying to get him to open up by saying that, you know, Hulk from Avengers, you are like the Hulk. You get angry, you have to learn to control your anger. That really helped him get a slow grip on his anger. And then he started teaching the younger kids. And this kid is brilliant in math. So in math, he excels so quickly that he could teach kids higher and higher level kids. And that made him feel that, okay, I'm good at something. So that kid has a very troubled childhood. Like, his mother is not mentally stable. His father passed away a couple of years ago, drinking issues, alcoholic. And they don't have a house. Like, his mother doesn't have a house right now. So now that kid, the kid asked if the kid can stay at school. So we made arrangements for him to stay at school. And there were a few other kids who had a lot of issues at home. And if they go to home, they have to work. Because they have to work just to support themselves. If not, nothing, like, they have to work to earn. So then we created a hostel at school where it's not great facilities, but it's enough for, you know, it's something. It's like nothing versus something. So we had these four kids staying at school. And now this kid is doing wonders. Like, he has great, this is one kid who didn't talk with anyone. And now he's the best at social skills also. Like, he laughs, he jokes around, and he's very well adjusted. Like, you wouldn't believe that this was one kid who once had such a troubled background. So we have seen, like, such transformation of so many kids that we believe that this model really works. We have this other kid who also had a lot of family issues. And, you know, I mean, like, honestly, every child that we have, they have some horrible family backstory.
Absolutely.
That, but we try to kind of get them to rise above that, and they are able to do it. So it's just with the right kind of environment that we need to provide them. So, and we are not even honestly providing them the best of facilities. We are doing the best of what we can. It's not even equivalent to what a middle class child would have, you know. Absolutely. But still, they see that we care about them, and they are really trying. So we have a lot of these child labor kids who are going to be amazing in like a few years, you know, because they know so many skills, including making a whole house and repairing a house, from electrician training to carpentry. And they have a lot of interest in these things.
Okay.
So yeah, we have seen a lot of behavioral changes, and definitely we hope that, you know, they do better in life.
Now that you're saying that your one of the batches is going to be graduating very soon, so what do you have in plan for them post the graduate from here, for getting them any sort of job or work or whatever?
Yes. So we asked these kids what they want to do after class 10, and they all want to stay with us. So we are going to keep them till class 12 for now. And then one kid is interested in computers, so we will get him started on a coding program. We will focus on skills for now, because now is the time for them to build skills. So one kid is interested in business, so we will be setting up this mini golf course where that kid would be mostly managing it. So they would be pursuing their courses. Alongside that, they would be also receiving practical training in the fields that they're interested in. So that is what we are thinking for them. And also, we want them to get involved in community projects. So for 11th and 12th, what we are thinking is that clean drinking water is a big issue. So if we can get some of these kids to make water filters that purifies the water, then they can sell it to people in their villages for a low cost. And also solve the problem of dirty water. So we want them to get involved in these kind of small community projects. So we had the students from Oxford who were supposed to come this year as interns. So this is what we had in mind with them, that those kids, they will be able to start some community projects with our students and, you know, work towards improving the communities as well. But that did not happen this year. Hopefully next year we can continue with that.
All right. And what kind of tie-ups you have with the other organizations or department, government department or private, or
we have like tie-up for education for the students. There is a University of Science and Technology Meghalaya where they said they would educate our students for free.
Right.
But now our focus is implementing our model in government schools, because we have seen how great our model works. And if the same model, we can replicate that in every government school, then, you know, the kids should be able to take care of themselves. Now, one really good thing about our model is that, when we have students in level 10, right, for electrician training, if the kid reaches level 10 of electrician training, now we have levels for the vocational training also. So in level 1 of electrician, you have to know this much, level 2, you know, the same thing. So when they reach level 10, they are ready to teach level 1 students. So we are hope. So in the beginning, we have to get experts to teach the kids. But once they reach a point, they will be able to teach themselves. So we don't even need that many external people coming in, because level 10 kids can teach kids up to level 5, for example. And those keep graduating and they keep reinforcing it. Same with the teaching. So so now we have an MOU with the government of Assam to work in 100 government schools over a period of 3 years, 3 or 4 years. So we will try to implement our full model in the government schools. And now, because of the national education policy, all government schools are required to teach vocational training to their students. We have already been doing that since a few years. So now we are going to work on replicating our model in the government schools.
Oh, excellent. I think you have some project going on in Delhi also.
We did. So in 2018, end of that, we started working in a primary government school in Delhi. And we had great success with that. There were about like 40, 50 kids who were coming from a government orphanage. And those kids are very violent. Like the police inspector, school inspector, sorry, he warned us that these kids might stab. So you need to be careful. They have blades and they hurt themselves. They cut their hands, like very troubled kids. But with those kids also, we saw great results in 6 months, because they started making money for teaching. So when you tell them, okay, you have to be, first you have to behave well. If you behave well, then you are considered for teaching. So, you know, so when they see other kids making money, everyone wants that. So they slowly work on their behavior, and we saw like great results in, you know, in the students, and we're very happy with that. We couldn't do much vocational training because it was only a primary school. It was only up to class 5. But last year in June, we shut down our operations because of COVID. So we had staff from Assam that we had sent to Delhi, and we couldn't sustain, you know, keeping them with no schools going. So then we shut down the Delhi school, and then we decided to focus here. In the meantime, we got in touch with the Assam government over here, and they agreed to let us work in the government schools here. So now we will start working in the government schools here.
Now, let me go back to the kind of curriculum you follow. Apart from the skill training, what kind of activities do you have to actually retain the students? You know, right, when students, such students come to your school, they must be having some extracurricular activities, which...
Yes, they play football. They love playing football. Then we have music classes for them, or we had music classes for them before COVID. And we try to find whatever their interests are. We have painting, drawing. So the kids that already have a passion for some activity, we put them in that. But our main focus is on skills training. Because that is so essential for them. And we need to, by the time they graduate our school, they have to be in a position where they can earn some money. Otherwise, they go back in the cycle of child labor, where they have to go and work in the stone quarries. So in the beginning, we had more focus on these activities, but slow, because again, you know, it comes down to limited resources. We have limited funds, so we have to choose how we want to use that. But we have, again, like, so we have like football once a week or twice a week, depending on the kids and the availability of the teacher. They have music classes once a week, art classes once a week. So they're doing all these activities, and they're enjoying skills training also. Like when you're planting things and you see the plants grow, it's like really satisfying. So they are actually starting to enjoy the skills training, and it is not like it's just like a boring thing for them to do. Absolutely. So yeah, we are hoping that that's enough.
Tell me one thing, do you have the, you say you are still managing in whatever funds you get, but now I see that you have been praised by Niti Aayog, United Nations, World Economic Forum, BBC, you had shows on presentation on Al Jazeera, Forbes, Reuters and whatnot. So it's a well-recognized program what you are doing. So do you have sufficient people who are coming out to help you financially?
Yes, we actually are funded for these 100 government schools that we will work in. And that has been like, because till now we had like no funds. We went from like no funds to getting funds for 100 schools with full vocational training. So, you know, for the first time, actually, we do have people coming out and helping us with the programs. We are also planning on having a recycling machine in every government school. So that will add a lot of value, because the plastic that the students are bringing in, we'll make them into useful products, and then we will sell it to the community. So we will be building every government school in a way that it also serves the community. So the students will be growing organic food, which we will be selling to the community. So we want to make the school like a kind of like a marketplace, where people from the community, they can come and they can buy products and teach the students. So we want local people coming out and teaching the students. So we are trying to get to a model where we have the government school teachers, and then we have interns from colleges who can run the program. So that our intervention is not required. Right. So our school, because it is structured in a different way, where we group the kids by their, you know, skills and not by their age, and then you have to pay wages to the kids, it's complicated in the sense that it's not that easy to carry out. And then the whole class doesn't graduate, right? So you have these three kids graduating from 6 to 7, but that kid is in like class 1 in math. So it's like confusing. So we are working on developing an app for that.
Right.
So then all these things, if it is automatic, then it should be easier for the government teachers to implement the model. So we are working on building a system which can be scaled up very quickly. So we want to get to 100 schools and a sustainable one, exactly. So we are also in talks with the government to send their B.Ed. Students to these schools. So the B.Ed. Students who are training to be teachers, if they come for the training period in one of the Akshar schools or one of the government schools where Akshar is intervening and learn the process, when they are graduating, they are ready to implement that model in a new school. So we are trying to work with the government now, because, you know, anything, if we want to make an impact, we have to work with the government, because how many schools can we run, you
absolutely,
know?
Absolutely.
So there is a limit to that. So we are trying to work with the system now, get to a point where we can get the government schools functioning like government model schools.
Parmita, where do you want to see your Akshar Foundation in next 3 to 5 years?
3 years, 100 schools, at least 5 years, hopefully all schools in the state. And this model works. We have seen that it works.
Absolutely.
And because of this national education policy that was introduced recently, all schools in the country, they have to include vocational training. We were contacted by the government in MP in Gwalior to implement our model there. So we are hoping that once we can show that this can be done on a big scale, maybe the government can copy the model and run it in their own states, or we provide them the support that needs, that's needed for that. Like, we are also working on developing content for tablets. So our goal is that every child should have a tablet with their content on it. So that when they're moving from one level to the next, they are graduated by the teacher, and then on their tablet, they see the content for the level that they're supposed to be in. So we're trying to make everything digital, and this whole tablet program will be offline. So we are not dependent on the internet for that.
All right.
There is already an NGO, Learning Equality, where they have an open source software called Colibri, which is available offline. So we are working on that as well. So we are trying to get to a point where the government teachers, they have a lot of pressure from the authorities. There's a lot of reporting. It's hard.
Yes.
You know, it's just not an easy job at all doing that. So if you can streamline a lot of processes where their burden is reduced, so that, you know, they can focus more on the students, and if you can give them the equipment for that, like if they have a tablet with all the content, kids can mostly work on their own, and then they, whatever doubts they have, they consult the teacher for that. So we want to provide all the support that we can to the government teachers so that they can focus on the students and, you know, work towards improving the education of their particular school.
Right. Great. I think you are doing a wonderful job, and with the unique ideas. Parmita, I wish you all the best for the future. And
thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thank you for sparing time for us.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, I hope you had your learnings from this episode and got inspired to keep moving towards attaining your goals. Please share this episode with your friends by visiting my website, www.theinfluencertalks.com. If you have stories to share about people who influenced you positively, please do share with me, and I am waiting to hear from you. I'll catch up with you next week with a new episode of The Influencer Talks. Till then, be safe and be healthy.